Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
I'm Dana Perino, and this is Perino on Politics. Today, Americans will have the chance to see a new moon, but as far as the election goes, it is the same old politics. And I know you're sick of it, but we continue on because there's enough curiosity to figure out what is going on in politics. So that's why Perino on Politics is where we give you everything you need to know from a 30,000-foot view. And joining me today is a great friend of mine. I'm so excited for this. He's the founder of the Stewart Group. His name is Don Stewart, and he goes by Stu. Stu, welcome.
Thanks a bunch for having me. It's great to be here.
So last week, I had Michael Meehan on. Do you remember Michael Meehan from Senator Kerry's office?
Yeah.
And other and amazing lots of other things. And I got some great feedback that people liked learning how he and I knew each other. Mm. So this morning, I was trying to remember, how did you and I first meet? Was I at White House Council on Environmental Quality or at the Justice Department?
I think the latter. And we met over email the first time.
Okay. And you were working for Senator John Cornyn. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about where you grew up and how you ended up in politics.
Yeah, I have a very non-traditional route. I grew up in Riverside, California, and I left there in 88 and sort of traveled around. And then I went in the Army, and then I got out and went back to college. So I didn't graduate college till I was 30. So I tell kids that you don't need to know everything you're doing the rest of your life now. It's similar to what you have in your book. And that when I graduated, I was fortunate enough to know the outgoing regional director for Senator Coverdell then in Georgia. And he was moved to D.C. and he recommended me for that job. And I somehow or another got it. And
you lived in Savannah, is that right?
I was in Savannah and I covered the eastern part of Georgia for Senator Coverdell, who was a great man. And I worked for him. And then when he passed away, I went to Senator Phil Graham. I've been very, very fortunate. Mm-hmm. He retired.
You worked for some great
ones. Senator Cornyn and then Senator McConnell took me for a player to be named later back in 2006.
So when you worked for McConnell, so that was back in the day when I was deputy press secretary and then press secretary. And just so everyone knows, like, you know that the hours are tough, right? We would be up in the 4 o'clock hour. And we were a nation at war. This is, you know, the post 9/11 years. Lots of things going on. Supreme Court nominations. No social media at the time. But Tony Fratto is my deputy, and Stu was at McConnell's office, and myself. We would be emailing each other at 4 o'clock in the morning. Like, did you see this in the Washington Post? I can't believe the New York Times. Oh my gosh, are you going to call ABC News? And we would just strategize and work together and laugh. And truly, one of my favorite friends on earth is you. And I loved working with you and I love knowing you. And Stu also loves dogs. So,
amen.
With that as a table setter, let's talk about what we know. So, you're at the Stewart Group, and this is something that I think that all of your life experiences come together in a moment when then you can talk about politics in a way where you're not speaking for anybody but yourself.
Right.
So
right.
That's why I love to have you here. So what do you think is the state of the presidential race right now for Biden and Trump and RFK Jr.? Yeah. And then I want to ask you about the issues.
I think it could really go either way. This is one of those races where it's not predetermined. It's the longest general election in my lifetime. And I think we have a long way to go. One of your previous guests said we're going to have the entire baseball season before the election. Mm-hmm. We have a long, long way to go, and a lot of things can happen between now and then. But I think the issue sets are pretty much locked in. I think what people really care about isn't really changing a whole lot. And barring some tragedy, I don't think those issues will change. Inflation, border.
But it is abortion. Different. I mean, what do you think, since you worked for a member from Texas, then you worked for the majority leader and the minority leader, depending on the year, for McConnell. What do you think about the border being the top issue for voters in Michigan, for example? I mean, all Biden had to do was not do that. But he dismantled all of Trump's policies, and then there's obvious results. So now you have Rust Belt states saying that the immigration's their number one issue.
Right. I think that's one of the downsides to completely changing the previous administration's policies is that you wholly own the policies and the consequences, good or bad. If they had worked really well for the president, he would own that, but they haven't. And so now he owns that. And Michigan and Georgia are probably the two, maybe you can add Wisconsin, about a couple others, but he has to win Michigan. And the fact that it's an issue in Michigan is a real problem.
One of the other things that happened today, two other things happened today, earlier today that we were talking on Monday, May 8th, and getting ahead of myself, Monday, April 8th, in case you're listening to this later in the week. And so early this morning, before 7 a.m., Donald Trump, the former president, made a statement that he had previewed last week saying it's coming, or he'd flagged for it. He's like, I'm going to do a statement on abortion and my position on it and my policy. He did that statement today. I thought it was very interesting. And constitutionally sound, right, from what Charles Cook and what the Supreme Court told us after Dobbs. So there's the constitutionality of it, the merits of it in terms of leaving it to the states. He did not say he was going to back any sort of federal ban. So what are your thoughts on either on the merits and the constitutionality and then the politics on abortion?
Yeah, I think ironically, the far end of the right to life spectrum and the president's reelection campaign are in the same place, are both equally disappointed. I think the president's campaign wanted the former president to take a very strict national ban type approach to this, and that would allow them to run. I mean, obviously, the politics have gone in the Democrats' favor post-Dobbs. And I think they were really hoping that he would take a very, very strong, strict position, and he didn't. Mm-hmm. I think the question for me now is, what does this mean down ballot? What are Senate and House races going to do now that they have a Trump-approved position on this that's not all the way to one end or the other?
Do you think that that will have candidates then still then having to land wherever they want to land?
Yeah, I think especially in the House races where it's a different demographic than a national race or a state race like the Senate. I think Senate races, this does give Republicans more wiggle room than they might have otherwise had, it being Trump approved. I think that will give them the ability to take that position when they maybe otherwise could not have. Mm. So let's see if that has an impact. Democrats aren't going to let this issue go.
I mean, no, they're not. Like
they now have a fair pass and Trump's going to get it. I mean, they're still going to be all over this issue. So
yeah, we are definitely in for it on the abortion front in terms of the messaging wars.
You'll see a lot of commercials on this.
You will. Okay, then also let's talk about the other thing happening on Monday, April 8th, which is Joe Biden once again taking another run at student loan forgiveness and announcing this in Dane County, Wisconsin, which is often the county that makes a difference for Republicans or Democrats.
Yeah, I think the president's trying to kill his campaign. He's trying to kill two birds with one stone here. If you look at some of the recent polling, I'm not entirely convinced it's accurate yet. I need to see more. But it's starting to show a shift where older people who normally vote Republican are leaning more toward President Biden, and the younger votes are leaning toward the more populist Trump side of the aisle. And so I think this is an effort to bring them back into the fold. The other problem he has with the youth vote is if you look at the polling, a significant chunk of Biden supporters, people who self-identify as voting for Biden, are also saying that they're doing it to prevent Trump from taking office, not that they're for Biden, they're actually against Trump. And there's a real problem with anti-voters because they're less enthusiastic, they're less likely to get out the polls, less likely to bring their friend to the polls, and they're more inclined to stay home and say, well, I didn't want to vote for the other guy. And that's a problem. That enthusiasm gap is real and could be a real problem. So I think this is an effort to do both those things, bring the youth back in the fold and give people something to vote for instead of against.
It's really interesting to watch the political realignment because now you have the working class more aligned with the Republican Party, and the Biden administration is basically ceding all of that ground. You know, on student loan forgiveness, it's so offensive to people, to many people, people who paid their student loan, people who didn't go to college or who made a different decision, maybe to join the military and then go to college later, so that they didn't have a lot of debt. And yet they're all supposed to pay for the student loan forgiveness, and the Supreme Court, forget the merits, I mean the politics of it, the Supreme Court said on the merits it's not constitutional. So it must be, they must get on the Democratic side a lot from their focus groups or their polling data that says this is a winner for them?
Yeah, I think so. But I think what we don't know yet is the net value of this. In other words, he could pick up some young voters, but how many, like the people you just mentioned, the plumber who paid his own way through plumbing school, or, you know, the dad who's paying a mortgage, or the mom who went through nursing school on her own dime, are you going to lose those voters? Are you going to irritate those voters? So what's the net gain for him? It's not an easy free pass. It's there will be downside to this as well.
What do you think about the third party possibility of RFK Jr.? We did see over the weekend that No Labels, which was going to try to do a unity ticket, one Republican, one Democrat, they got a lot of attention. They got a lot of money for a long time for it to just end with nothing. Yeah. So there will be no Labels candidate. But RFK Jr., he says he's going to be in it. He might even be on a few ballots.
He might. But here's the thing with the third party. This is planning for hope, not planning for reality. You know, the Republican Party was formed in the 1800s. They've had lots and lots of time to have an infrastructure, to have a platform, to have people, to grow grassroots, to grow younger, lower level offices, to grow into bigger offices. And you can't just do that overnight. Mm-hmm. And the types of people that you would pick, it's not an accident that President Trump went with the Republican Party instead of a third party, because you have the infrastructure, you have the people, you have the brand identity. If he had run on as a third party candidate, I don't know that he would have won.
Right.
So there's a reason he did that. A third party at this point, maybe some point in the future, there'll be 3 and 4 and 5 parties. But at this point, it's hope. And so anybody who is a third party, whether it's a libertarian on the right or an RFK on the whatever point of the spectrum he is, they're spoilers. They take votes away from other people. You saw it in the Georgia Senate races with Purdue, you know, having a third party candidate.
So do you think that's why the Biden team is so aggressively going after RFK Jr.? But Trump hasn't held back either.
Right. I mean, all of, at this point, unless you're on all the ballots, especially swing state ballots, all you can do really is make a point. And you take votes away from somebody, whether it be Republican or Democrat, you're taking votes away from somebody.
Wow.
And you're not making policy, you're making a point. You have to win an election to make policy.
Let's talk about the Senate for a minute, because you are such an expert there. What does it mean? How important is it for either party to have the majority in the Senate?
It's huge. I mean, it sets the agenda. You get to decide what's happening. The minority party, at least for now, has a lot of, and we can talk about this later, but the minority party has a lot of power, and you have to be bipartisan to move almost anything through the Senate. There are some exceptions. Mm-hmm. But being the majority, you get to decide what comes up for a vote. If the president's party is not in charge of the Senate, the other party can just decide we're not voting on any of his bills, we're not voting on any of his nominees. I mean, this is pretty extreme, but it could happen. So having the first right of recognition in the Senate is hugely important.
What do you think about the Senate's decision to not take up H.R. 2? This is a tougher immigration bill that the House sent over. And now Biden hammering the Republicans, saying you're the ones who killed it. I just wonder if that could actually blow back on Schumer and the Democrats in the general election.
Yeah, I think it's hard for your average voter to sort of run through all the machinations of filibusters or this or that, or I took this bill, not the other bill. All they know is it hasn't been fixed, and the party in power gets blamed when things aren't fixed.
What are the Senate races that you're watching the most right now, and that will likely determine control in 2024?
Yeah, I think there are a few that are fascinating. They're not surprises. Michigan's really interesting. Nevada, Arizona, now that Senator Sinema's not in it, that would have been a really, really fun race to watch, a three-way. So that's really big. But all the sort of swing state, Montana, I think is really, really fascinating. And the way
what about Pennsylvania?
Pennsylvania would be fun as well. It's a different state because the president is, I mean, it's not an accident that his campaign is there and that he's been spending so much time there. I think that one, it'll be fun to watch. And I obviously the president's campaign thinks that's going to be a real fight.
Do you think the Republican Dave McCormick has a chance there?
Sure. Yeah, of course. I think, like I said, there's a lot that could happen between now and then that could have we could have a really sleepy election, or we could have a wave election. And we won't know that until we're a whole lot closer to it. I think anybody who tells you today that there's going to be a wave election or that it's a status quo election.
I'm kind of having fun in the not knowing phase.
Yeah.
In the I don't know phase. I like that phase. for
that's
now.
That's how elections used to be. And, you know, before everybody told us what was going to happen 24 hours a day. You mentioned the pre-Twitter world. In 2006, when I started with McConnell, was a really big year because 2006, 2007, Twitter and the iPhone came out and changed political media coverage forever.
It really has. Okay, stand by. We'll have more Perino on politics coming up.
The Will Cain Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox and Friends weekend host Will Cain as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
And we're back with Perino on Politics. Stu, I want to discuss a couple of things that we mentioned, the issues. Talk to me about Biden and Bidenomics and that whole messaging decision to embrace Bidenomics. And now they're like, whoops, maybe we shouldn't have done that.
Right. I think that was pretty risky from the beginning. You know, he didn't know how he passed several pieces of legislation. He passed some really, really big change legislation with transportation and IRA and others. But I don't think he knew how it was going to turn out. I don't know if he saw the implications of it. And jumping on claiming credit for the economy turning around before the economy turned around was a big risk. And people aren't feeling it yet. So I think you see the campaign stepping back from Bidenomics, maybe waiting until the economy changes before they do it. Even though inflation has eased, it's not going down. You know, I call it the platform effect of inflation. Remember after Katrina, gas prices went to $2 and everybody thought that was crazy and they'd come back down after. They've never gone below $2. Same thing with inflation now. If you can sell in a grocery store, if you can sell chicken for $10, you're always going to sell it for at least $10. So people aren't feeling the effects of easing inflation. They're seeing high prices no matter where they go.
What about, talk to me a little bit about the car market, in buying a new car and the administration on EVs. It's pretty interesting. When they were first doing the push for EVs initially, it was if you buy an EV, electric vehicle, you're going to save a lot of money on gas.
Right.
Then they said, hey, we want you to buy EVs so badly that we're going to give you thousands of dollars in tax credits for you to buy EVs. And still people didn't, you know, latch on. People weren't buying them as much. And now you had Pete Buttigieg, the Secretary of Transportation, last week saying, if you don't buy an EV, you're basically a flat earther and you don't care about the environment. So the messaging hasn't worked. But is the car market a good predictor of how people are feeling at home?
I think what you're seeing, and I'm a little biased, I think electric, a good EV is a really fun vehicle to drive. And so I'm not anti-EV. I do think that consumer choice really matters. And the auto industry spent a lot of time with the administration highlighting the need for consumer choice and for consumers to drive the market and for charging and other infrastructure to be in place before that happens. So I think what you're seeing is that consumers matter and consumers having a point of view matters. And you can't, people don't like being told what to do.
Right.
Just a general axiom in politics. People don't like being told what to do. They like having choice. And I think you're seeing a shift more now where the administration is allowing plug-in hybrids and other choices to be part of the marketplace and part of their rule is a good step. People really like to make a choice. They don't care if you drive an EV, but just don't force me to buy one.
One of the issues that you and I dealt with way back in the day was Obamacare.
Right.
And it's still an issue.
Right.
And in 2016, President Trump said that we're going to repeal and replace Obamacare. That never came to fruition. In 2020, there was a lot about Obamacare and healthcare in general. We were in the middle of COVID. And last week, there was a real distinct difference. Ever since that Radio City Music Hall event that the Biden team had for his campaign, where they raised $25 million in one night.
Right.
Biden has really stopped talking about the border that much, and he is really starting to talk about health care again. And this issue kind of never goes away. It is an important issue. Where do you think that the Biden team is going on that? But perhaps more importantly, do the Republicans have a position, a policy, a message?
Yeah, I think it's one of the important reminders of the lack of permanence in politics. You know, Obamacare, after the first 6 months or so, was upside down in the polls. It was really negative. It was a real drag on the Obama team. It elected a whole bunch of Republicans across the country. Now you're seeing some of the opposite in where, because people have it now. And now instead of taking away the plan I had, now you're trying to take away this new plan. So it's the people who want to repeal it are the people taking away now instead of Obamacare, which was you can't keep your doctor. Now it's you can't keep your insurance. And so anytime you try to take something away from consumers and voters, you're in a just a much different position.
And my last question in this segment is on the economy. Are the Republicans talking about what they would do to bring down prices? Because I follow this stuff pretty closely, and I actually don't see it.
There's some. The main message seems to be that we won't be spending $1 trillion a minute, and that will help. But, you know, in politics, if you're the challenger, you don't really always need to tell everything you're going to do. You just need to highlight what the people in power, because the people in power are responsible for the consequences of their policies.
Point. We'll be right back with more Perino on Politics next. And welcome back to Perino on Politics. Stu, this is where I ask, what am I missing? What are you paying attention to that I should have on my radar?
I think there's two, and we've talked about one, the retirements in Congress.
Well, talk to me a little bit more about that. Expand on it, because I don't know if people realize how many good members of Congress are deciding to hang it up.
Yeah, it's massive this year. I mean, in the House alone, you're seeing not just rank and file members, but big committee chairs. Energy and Commerce, one of the biggest in the House. Appropriations, Financial Services, the China Committee, which you've talked about before, and Homeland Security. Those are very senior people and really the committees that people spend their whole career trying to get to be chairman of, and now they're leaving. I think that's a really big deal. And the Senate, on the Democrat side in particular, you lose the chair of Agriculture, Environment and Public Works, others, Foreign Relations, Energy. Mm-hmm. So you're losing all these chairmen. And so not only do you lose all that institutional memory and the experience of how to move legislation through the Senate and the House, but you're seeing a lot of new people coming in with different ideas for good or bad. And the committees themselves will be made up of different people. So if from a business advocacy side, you need to plan for that now. You need to be ready for the new folks that are going to, you need to get to know who they are. They need to know you. That's a lot of work. It's not just a couple people, but it's a lot of work for if you're in industry now and you're not already reaching out to the presumptive chairs or senior members of those committees, you're already behind.
Wow. And what about Mitch McConnell deciding not to run for majority leader again?
Yeah, I wasn't really surprised. The timing was a little bit of a surprise to me, but it, you know, it was all good things come to an end. He's been in senior leadership my entire political life, which is amazing. And I think him leaving will have an impact on the Senate. He's just so good, and his team is so good. Mm-hmm. It'll be different. On the plus side, you know, the main people that are running for this, you know, Senator Thune, I've worked with him for a very long time. He's a great senator, a great leader. Senator Cornyn, I actually worked for a long time. He's also great. Whoever takes Senator McConnell's place, the Republicans will be in good hands. They have some really good bench, and I think they're going to be just fine. It will just be different.
Does it drive you crazy that Senator Schumer only reads from statements when he goes to the Senate floor? You don't have to answer that if you don't want to. I will say it drives me up a wall. I'm like, you can't say good morning without reading it off the paper.
It's discipline.
I guess that might be a way to look at it. You're right. That's why I like talking to you. The other issue you wanted to mention is the filibuster.
Yeah.
And why should we care?
We should all care because it's going to change. If this happens, if the filibuster, the so-called nuclear option happens and the ability for the minority party to have a voice in the Senate goes away, the Senate will be just like the House. And you can move anything through there and nobody from the minority party can stop you.
So how does the filibuster work? Just for people. We keep this at a pretty high level.
Yeah, any one senator can stop legislation or a nomination from moving until or unless 60 members of the Senate vote to stop it. And with 60 senators, that requires a bipartisan, in the current climate, a bipartisan vote to move something forward. So you can't just ram something through on a partisan basis. We had a precedent just a couple of years ago. The Senate Democrats tried to end this, the ability to stop things. And they failed because two of their own members voted against it, and they voted with Republicans. Both those members, Senator Manchin and Senator Sinema, are leaving. So there's a possibility next year if President Biden is reelected and the House and Senate are controlled by Democrats, I think you will see this as one of the first things they do is to end the ability for the minority party to stop things.
That would just be so seismic in terms of our constitutional history.
It'll be huge. And the Senate's always, we haven't always had a formal cloture rule with 60 votes required, but we always had the ability for the Senate to slow things down. Mm-hmm. If you don't have that now, there are a lot of things that didn't happen that could now happen. I think the problem that the people who want to do that is short-term thinking, because whatever you can do now, in 4 years with a new president and a new Congress, or completely undo it. So anything you can do, there's no more permanence to legislation. There's no more permanence to the types of things that go through Congress. And from a business standpoint, you don't want that, because business doesn't always like what the government does, but they like the certainty of it and they can plan for it. They know the rules of the road and they can move forward. But if you know that every 4 years, everything that just happened can be overturned, that's not great for us.
That's a problem with executive orders in the presidency as well. My last question for you is, I wanted you to talk about the everyone agrees with me fallacy. I hear this a lot.
Yeah.
So what is the fallacy and what's the pitfall?
Yeah, it's a real problem. It's the problem, and you see it in politics, and you see it at the Thanksgiving table. It's the fallacy of only watching or listening to media that agrees with you and only talking to people who agree with you. And you tend to think that, well, I believe this, that must mean that everybody does. And from a political standpoint, it's death, because especially running statewide or nationwide, if you assume that everybody agrees with you and you really press an issue and you find out that half the country really doesn't, that's a real problem. Same thing with business, same thing with the media. You can't just assume that everybody agrees with you. And too often now, because of the segmentation of media, the people just hanging out with people that agree with them, you see this all the time, and it's really bad for politics. And it's not good from a professional politics standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely can remember in 2020 hearing from people like, I don't know a soul who's going to vote for Biden, because obviously Trump is going to win. And then the shock when he didn't, or you know, and vice versa. You know, Democrats will say, I don't know anybody who would ever vote for Trump.
Right. It's like the old yard sign problem. Well, I saw a bunch of yard signs, so that guy must be going to get elected. And you see it now with, like I talked about, the enthusiasm gap. I've never seen a Biden flag on a truck, and I've never seen a blue Biden cap. That doesn't mean that he doesn't have a real shot at winning this election.
Fascinating. All right, we have a quick quiz. It's multiple choice. Almost 2 years after the United States declared independence, the first total solar eclipse was recorded in 1778. Which Revolutionary War battle did it precede? This is so hard. A, it's the battles of Lexington and Concord. The Battle of Princeton, isn't it B? Or C, the Battle of Monmouth?
Princeton.
I have no idea. It was the Battle of Monmouth, and let me tell you why. So Thomas Jefferson documented this event from Monticello, writing that he was much disappointed in Virginia generally on the day of the great eclipse, which proved to be cloudy. And apparently that's going to happen again today.
Yeah.
You're not going to get an eclipse where you are, right?
Yeah, partial. Here in South Florida, we'll have a partial.
And then you'll make your way to the dog beach just to see how everyone's doing tonight.
That's right. Right down the street.
Don Stewart of the Stewart Group. Thank you so much, Stu. I adore you. Appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you, Danny. I really appreciate it.
Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
The Fox News Rundown, a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Your daily dose of news twice a day, featuring insight from top newsmakers, reporters, and Fox News contributors. Listen and subscribe now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.